Welcome to the Blister Podcast, a program dedicated to interesting people, the great outdoors, and a bunch of other stuff we like. I'm Jonathan Ellsworth, the founder of Blister, and you can check us out online at blisterreview.com, where, among other things, we publish in-depth and totally honest reviews of outdoor sports equipment. Today on the podcast, we're talking to the first champion of American Ninja Warrior, Isaac Caldiero. If you've been living under a rock and have never seen American Ninja Warrior, you need to. It's an amazing show that features a number of remarkable people and athletes, and the show is getting wildly popular. 2 years ago, 5.3 million people tuned in to watch the finals, and this past season, that number grew to 6.2 million. This competition is a riveting and nerve-wracking display of athleticism, strategy, focus, endurance, and mental toughness. You can head over to blisterreview.com and check out the show notes to this episode of the podcast to watch videos of Isaac's winning effort, and there are also links there to full episodes of American Ninja Warrior. On this podcast, we talk to Isaac about his life before American Ninja Warrior, where he grew up, his background and his accomplishments in climbing, and the reasons for Isaac's success on this past season of the show. We also get into Isaac's advice for those who'd like to compete on the show, and we get Isaac's take on the controversy surrounding his win and about what life looks like when you go from being a dyed-in-the-wool dirtbag climber to a guy who just won $1 million. Isaac's a sharp guy, a passionate climber, and one hell of an athlete, and I'm certain you're going to enjoy this conversation. This episode of the Blister Podcast is presented by Alaska Airlines. Alaska Airlines is now offering seasonal flights between Seattle and Steamboat Springs, as well as flights to Sun Valley from Seattle and LAX. One more thing, when you fly Alaska Airlines to places like Alyeska Resort, Big Sky, or Crested Butte, just present your boarding pass and you get to ski for free. Go to alaskaair.com/ski to check out the specific terms and conditions. First question, where in the world are you?
Well, right at this moment, I'm actually in southern Utah, in St. George, Utah. Just visiting friends and trying to rock climb. And it's about 100 miles from Las Vegas. So we were there hanging out with some friends over New Year's climbing. And then now we're kind of in our other favorite desert, which is not very far away. And my girlfriend Laura has a lot of family here and a lot of mutual friends that we grew up with all live here too. So we're just hanging out, enjoying life and rock climbing as much as possible.
So, okay, first of all, one, congratulations on winning American Ninja Warrior.
Thank you.
And what was the date? What that happened? I think I know, but
the air date was September 14th. Mm-hmm. But the actual physical date when I actually won was June 25th, I believe.
June 25th.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So it was back right in the dead of the heat in the summer in Las Vegas, and I had to keep it all top secret even from my family for about 3 months. And it was quite the surprise for everybody. So,
So I'm curious. Okay, so since last June, how much of a break from climbing have you taken? Has it been a minimal break? Did you take a lot of time off?
Well, normally I don't climb a whole lot during the summer months because it's so hot anyway. So
yeah.
I tend to have to work during the summers. Whether it's, carpentry and building houses or waiting tables or guiding, out of national parks. I do a lot of that in the summers. And then that's my time off of climbing. And then as soon as the weather starts to cool, I'll hit the road and start traveling and rock climbing. But this year was slightly different because right when the weather started getting good for rock climbing was kind of right when Ninja Warrior, the finale, aired. And so I was busy bouncing all over, doing a ton of publicity and press all over the country. And that's basically been my number one priority for the last 4 months basically, but I have luckily been able to get out and do a lot of really cool climbing. We were just out in Tennessee doing some really fun climbing. Before that we were up in Seattle and Canada, so like in between little publicity gigs, would get out there on the rocks and take a little breather.
Yeah. And these days, I want to ask a bit, you know, kind of do the ramp up about your introduction to climbing but these days, when you say climbing, I mean, are you bouldering, say, exclusively, or are you still dabbling around in sport, trad, bouldering, whatever? What's it look like for you?
Yeah, so right at the current moment, you know, ever since I met Laura, it's been exactly 6 years. We met 6 years ago on New Year's Eve, so we just had our little anniversary, and back here in the desert where we met. So every year we come back to the desert and rock climb. But ever since I kind of got her into climbing, we primarily just do bouldering, you know, different styles of bouldering, obviously, you know, taller boulders, smaller boulders, steeper ones. And every once in a while we'll get out on some ropes. But previously to that, I had a huge background in doing trad climbing and free solo climbing, but I've kind of started to tame down just a little bit, just for multiple reasons and different head of direction and where I want to go with my life and what I want to do. But I still want to go dabble in more of the fun death defying feats just as they come. This is kind of the thing you don't really plan out. They just kind of, you do them as you get inspired to do them. And I just have been inspired to do other things lately. So yeah. Primarily bouldering.
Yep. And okay. So let me see if I have this right. You are currently 33 years old. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I think I've read somewhere that you've been climbing for about 18 years.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. What kinds of stuff were you up to before you started climbing or found climbing? Which I guess I'm not good at math. So whatever, you know, 33 minus 18 is, what were you up to in the early years?
So basically I was about 14 going on 15 years old. And a neighborhood friend of mine, you know, really inspired me to get out and rock climb. But before that, my parents were very, very protective of me and really wanted me to like read books and kind of play it safe and always kind of just take things easy. But I just always naturally have been a total, you know, adrenaline junkie, you know, from skateboarding and riding motorcycles and mountain biking and slacklining. From a young age, I was really involved in a lot of crazy sports. And then when I was 10 years old, actually, I broke my leg skiing. And that kind of slowed me down and kind of gave me a bit of a reality check. And from that moment on, I kind of really realized, I was like, wow, like, obviously I don't want to hurt myself anymore, but this is really cool. And I do not want to like sit around and do like a desk job.
Yep.
So, you know, by the time I turned 15, like I said, a really good friend of mine who I'm really close friends with to this day, who got me into rock climbing, you know, he would sneak me out into the mountains and I'd go rock climbing with him. And that's kind of where it all began. My passion and my desire to go rock climb.
So, and where were you growing up?
So I was born in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay.
And then I was raised just south of there near Provo in a town called Orem, Utah. It's a funny little town with beautiful mountains really close by. And I mean, it's heavily, heavily populated by the Mormon religion. And I was actually raised in the Mormon religion. I don't practice it anymore or a part of the organization. But yeah, I mean, Now, after growing up there, I'm like, wow, I couldn't have picked a better place to have been raised, because literally I had, you know, like all sorts of different extreme sports, like within 10 minutes out my back door growing up. And I never took it, not even for a second did I take it for granted, and I still don't.
So you're 14, 15, you're getting dragged out onto rock. And so was this, even from your earliest time climbing, was this primarily sport climbing? Were you already like sometimes getting on ropes, sometimes bouldering? Were you already getting into a mix of stuff early on?
So at that time when I started climbing, I mean, it not really that long ago, but actually bouldering was barely even a sport. There wasn't even really crash pads. Very many people, people bouldered, but not seriously. And it was mostly just to train to go sport climbing and to do bigger walls and stuff like that. So I grew up sport climbing and all ropes primarily. Mm-hmm. And then in the gym and here and there, I'd go on little climbing trips. And eventually I went on like one of my first climbing trips to a place called Joe's Valley, Utah, which later on I ended up writing a guidebook for, and now is like one of the most popular bouldering areas in the country.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like my little stomping grounds, along with many other like really amazing world-class sport climbing areas. And so from that point on, I kind of dabbled in sport. And then that same friend of mine who I grew up with climbing, he kind of went the other direction with his climbing. He's a really talented sport climber and boulder, but he got more wrapped up into doing big mountains and like ice climbing and, you know, like stuff in, you know, Nepal and Pakistan and Alaska. And so he, every once in a while, would drag me out to go trad climbing, like in Yosemite or Zion, and just totally scare the crap out of me. And it's fun. Like I basically feel like I'm free soloing. I don't trust any of the gear like he does.
Yeah.
And I just don't fall. I'm just like, I can't fall.
Yeah.
And I just climb, and it's super awesome. And I love it, but I do it like once every few years and I'm like, all right, that was good for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. All the trad climbers I know, I always look at them a little sideways, respect it. But I think like, I don't want to hang on that stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, it's definitely a different style and technique, and it's fun to do every once in a while, but it's really painful, like jamming your fingers in cracks and twisting and turning. It just never felt as pleasing to my body. My body doesn't agree with it as much as it does with bouldering and sport climbing. So, mm-hmm.
And did you say, so you said your friend is, did I mishear you? Did you say that he's doing some ice climbing and mountaineering? Have you ever gone down that road?
Not a whole lot, not like full on, you know. He's taken me out ice climbing a couple times, yeah, but I've never really been super intrigued by going out and just freezing my butt off and doing big mountains and hiking for days and days. And he's totally like loves torturing himself. Even from a young age, you know, we would go mountain biking and he would just like beat himself up nonstop just on the trails. And he just always has had that mentality to him. And I've always had the opposite. I'm like, oh, I just want to enjoy it. Like, that's not enjoyable to me. I want to go enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what's deterred me away from doing the bigger mountain stuff. I totally have respect for it. It's like, wow, if you do that, like, props to you. That's amazing. And he's taken it to some really big extremes. And, you know, he's an amazing, amazing rock climber and ice climber and mixed ice and mountain climber. And he's done first ascents that who knows if they'll ever even be repeated, because it takes like 2 weeks just to get out to the base of it, you know, in the middle of Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got to admit, you know, I think American Ninja Warrior, this has been this great development kind of for all sorts of different reasons. And I think, how do I say this? I think it's fun seeing this sort of grabbing a hold and becoming, you know, kind of increasingly more this mainstream event. And, you know, and there's just a ton of enthusiasm around it, right? And it's so cool to see this happening. And it's, you know, as much as I still do love, you know, some of the mainstream sports, it's so fun seeing this kind of non-mainstream athleticism, you know, being displayed, right, on broadcast television. And anyway, that's been a really fun thing for me to watch. And it's been, that's why I think, particularly in talking to you, though, While I'm, you know, so impressed by what you've, you know, accomplished on ANW, when I found out that you wrote the guidebook to Joe's, that I think I'm still more impressed by that somehow. wouldn't we talk about sort of Waco and Bishop and Joe's as sort of, I mean, is that the trifecta
especially in the West Coast, you know, that's definitely like the three major zones, you know, and there's a lot of zones, obviously, but those are some of the most popular areas right now. And kind of, you know, I'm sure you've seen things go and come and go in different waves. And
it was
definitely like, I was honored to be able to take that initial step, because no one had written a guide in like over 10 years. It was well overdue. And I had no clue what I was getting myself into. Mm-hmm. Laura, my girlfriend, who's also a fellow competitor on the show and climber, she had a camera at the time. And I was like, we should do the guidebook. Like, why not? You know all the climbs. You put some of them up. Like, why don't you make the guidebook? And so she really, like, motivated me, encouraged me to do it. And so I taught myself how to use Adobe InDesign. And before that, all I knew how to do was, you know, check my email and write someone on Facebook. so that was kind of like a fun little obstacle on its own, was just learning computers and sitting there and fixating on that and Photoshop and so yeah, it was a fun project and it totally worked out well. And then in the end, it was awesome because I was like just running around rock climbing and collecting checks from different retail stores who buying my book. And I was like, yes, this is awesome.
And how old were you when you first started climbing in Joe's Valley?
My very first climbing trip was in the first year I started rock climbing. So I was 15 years old. I went on a road trip with some amazing, amazing, talented rock climbers. Unfortunately, some of them don't climb still to these days. They've all kind of gone on different paths, but some of them still do. But I still remember because it was like I mean, I was like a little kid and I was going out with all these like total, like to me at the time, they were pro climbers. They were really, really way over my head, and they took me under their wing. And we went on this gnarly, gnarly drive through a Spanish Fork Canyon, which is like one of the deadliest canyons in the world to drive through in the middle of the winter, because there's tons of deer and just heinous snowstorm. But on the other edge of that mountain range is just bright blue skies, and that's where Joe's Valley is. So more often than not, in the middle of the winter, you just have to battle through these heinous snowstorms. And I just remember that moment of like just being so gripped and so terrified, and finally I was just like, what am I getting myself into? I hope I don't die. And then I got to the other end and I was like, oh wow, look at this mecca of boulders and this whole new world of rock climbing outside of the gym and outside of sport climbing. Ever since then, I just was hooked to bouldering and being outside, and slowly stopped going into the gym. So
I also recently learned that you participated in the last Seco Block in Park City. Is that right?
Yeah. This was my third season in a row competing
okay.
on it.
Okay. Yeah. I was out there for the, I guess the inaugural event. And it is still one of the very coolest events I've witnessed in person, like in any sport.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So I was psyched to see that I didn't know actually that you'd been involved. I mean, there's only been three. Is that right?
Yeah.
You've been there
exactly
from the beginning.
Here in America. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the very first kind of major one was here. It was at the same location in Park City. Yeah.
Yep. So tell me about that. I mean, and then I want the follow-up question. Have you done much or any deep water soloing outside of Park City, which is kind of funny to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, a long time ago, one of my first experiences with deep water soloing was to Mallorca in Spain.
Uh-huh.
I went out with a good friend of mine out rock climbing on a 2-month trip to Spain, and we spent about 15 days, 2 weeks in Mallorca deep water soloing, and I was totally blown away. Unfortunately, like after about 3 days, I was doing tons of like backflips and stuff off of every cliff I could find. And after every time I topped out, I would do these huge backflips, and my ears got like infected or something from the salt water. But I just got this gnarly ear infection, and the second like I would just like look at the ocean water and my ears would start hurting. And so I had to wear earplugs, and I tried not to climb on anything that I would fall into, but I still got a good taste of it. And then about a year later, I got invited to be part of this DVD video project / development project over in Thailand, where me and three other climbers were flown out to Thailand for 2.5 months, where we went and developed deep water solo bouldering and deep water soloing on these multiple different islands all over the Gulf of Thailand, and then on the west coast of Thailand outside of Tonsai, which is like the popular sport crag and everything like that. So yeah, I've had, between all that and then just, here and there, random little cliffs over rivers and lakes. I've had a fair share of saltwater enemas.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that was actually my follow-up question. If you made the pilgrimage to Mallorca, and that's a place I want to go to badly. And
you definitely should, man. If you like that style, even if you're not a big heady climber or whatever, like that's what's so cool about. And Mallorca is like designed perfectly for it, because you can pick any grade and climb as high as you want, and it's totally safe. Or you can push the limits and scare the hell out of yourself, and you can do whatever you want. Take it to whatever level you want.
Yep. No, someday for sure. So about American Ninja Warrior, when did this competition first get onto your radar?
Maybe about, I would say about 10 years ago, through climbing actually. 510, my shoe climbing sponsor, they had posted a video clip of this guy named Levi Muenberg, who is like kind of an old school prodigy of Ninja Warrior, and he was competing back in Japan, and I think 510 was like looking into sponsoring them, or maybe they were saying like, oh, check this guy out, like all climbers, you should go compete in this. But no one really knew how to get on it or what it was or where it was or anything like that. And so that's where I initially first kind of saw it, and then I would watch the Japanese show and kind of get into it that way. But I never really like got super obsessed with it until 3 years ago, my first season competing, when two of my really good friends, well, one of them, a really good climber friend of mine, Dr. Noah Kaufman, who's, pretty well known on the show. He was like, oh yeah, my buddy Brian Arnold, he competed on the show, and he's a climber, and he did really good his first year. Like, we should all compete. And the next thing we knew, it was like submission time, and we were filling out, you know, paperwork to submit. And, you know, I actually didn't get accepted my first year. And that kind of like is what drove me to want to like do it even more. I was like, oh yeah, like, you guys didn't accept me. Like, I want to be on the show no matter what. And so you can go do what's called a walk online. And every year since then, it's gotten more and more like improbable to actually get on the show through the walk online, unless you have like a minimum month to like in advance to go camp out in line. And so, yeah, me and Laura, we drove to Denver, Colorado, which is where my region was. And I'd heard that if you, you know, do something to stand out, you know, you have your chances of getting accepted are a little bit more likely as far as being on the walk online, because just being there doesn't 100% guarantee you a spot. So I, you know, I just so happened to have a spare Jesus costume laying around, and I slapped it on, and I've been known to resemble the Christ himself when I have a full beard. And so I walked around in my Jesus outfit, and kind of, and the producer totally loved it and ate it up. And we, you know, both me and Laura both got on the show as walk-on competitors with like zero training. And that first year I made it all the way to the Vegas finals. And I was just hooked from that moment on. I was like, I want to do this. I need to do this. Everyone thinks it's impossible. I know I can do this, and this impossible feat. I want to be the guy who does it, who's the first American Ninja Warrior. So,
So that when I first started watching the show, I mostly just thought, okay, so basically American Ninja Warrior competitors are like 99% whack jobs. But turns out that you just have to kind of have your little gimmick, maybe there's a little bit of gamesmanship there or something. You got to figure out how to stand out a bit. That might explain the amazing array of like neon tights and that kind of thing. Is this right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, everyone goes on the show to have fun and to like express themselves in whichever way manner it could be, whether it's dyeing your hair a crazy color or wearing a crazy spandex or the things you say being crazy or whatever. You know, like they really like, you know, dynamic, entertaining people who as well are, you know, have interesting jobs and careers. And who are these amazing, talented athletes on the side as well. So all those things combined are what will hopefully get you on the show. But like I said, every year it's gotten more and more intense. You know, they have, because everybody wants to be on the show. You know, like last year alone, I think they had 50,000 people apply, and they only accept about 600 to actually try to qualify. So that's well under 1% of people trying out for it even get a chance to physically go try the course. So by the end of it, going down through all the different stages and then finally getting down to one person, it's kind of an amazing breakdown of how it all works.
It is an amazing breakdown. And I mean, I'd have to, maybe you already know, I had heard a friend of mine actually competed on American Ninja Warrior for the first time this past season. And she had mentioned that similar number, about 50,000 applicants for, you know, and whatever, 600 or so made it on. That was for this past season? I mean, and so have you even heard what, I'm assuming those numbers are going to be higher this year.
I mean, the show's popularity is getting huge. And like, it's every single person and there is wants to be on it or try it. And so there's tons of ninja gyms popping up everywhere. And I can only imagine those numbers are, I wouldn't be surprised if they doubled this year. And actually, the submission deadline is coming up pretty soon. It's towards the end of January, I think. Okay. So they should have a pretty good idea here in like a month or so of how many people applied for 2016 ANW8. So, it'll be interesting to see if someone can actually take it down again. It's going to be pretty tricky, though. I have a feeling the course designers and the producers are, they don't want anybody to win, you know. It's kind of like that mystique behind it. And so they're going to step it up quite a bit, and it's going to be awesome.
So that was another question I wanted to ask you, whether you assumed or had heard that, I mean, you're expecting the course to be tweaked, to be bumped up for this coming season.
Definitely quite a bit. I know just hearing from the course designers and the producers, they're always talking like, I mean, they really want someone to beat it, but at the same time they don't. But they wanted someone to beat it too, or they were hoping someone could beat it, so that they could actually start like with a fresh new slate and design a whole bunch of new array of obstacles, because they have all sorts of crazy masterminds and people designing cool cool obstacles to challenge us. And everyone's getting so trained on all those specific obstacles that they're becoming more and more second nature. Like even for myself on a lot of the obstacles, like stage three, for instance, I have trained so much on those obstacles. At one point, you know, it's like a boulder problem or a rock climb, you know, like it feels really difficult at first, but once you dial it in and you figure out all the little specific techniques, you can kind of dumb it down and make it fairly simple.
Yep. Yeah. And oh man, a number of questions here. So remind me, this season was what number for you, you yourself competing?
This is my third season in competing.
So what was the difference? I mean, between first, second, and third, I mean, did you feel like, you know, everything just happened to come together this season? Did you feel like you tweaked your own training and preparation for this in a way that made the difference? How would you describe that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, each year was a huge, huge learning curve. And a really, really good lessons were learned. Every year I learned from my mistakes. I changed my routine, my training. I mean, the first year I didn't train at all. I just went right into it feeling really strong and confident. But then something as simple as me not wearing the correct shoes, that mm-hmm. something was actually a huge, huge detriment to me, and it made me fall. So that was a simple fix, and, you know, never again will I ever fall because of my shoes. I know now what shoes to wear and to make sure those functional. And then the second year, you know, after that point is when I really stepped it up and was like, that's when I got the bug, you know, where you're like, you can't stop thinking about it. And all you want to do is succeed on it. So I did a lot of training my second year. I even took it upon myself to build my own ninja course in my parents' backyard and just train nonstop, like 7 days a week. That's all I was doing. Totally consumed. I was watching Ninja Warrior 24/7. I felt like I was on top of the world, like nothing can stop me. But then sure enough, you know, on stage two, I fell on something I have built in my backyard that I've done a million times with blindfolded one arm, you know, on the double salmon ladder. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I can contribute it to, my failure to, was the fact that I was overtrained on my specific obstacles that I had built. And the obstacles on Ninja Warrior are so specific and really, really delicate and sensitive. And if you train so much on one obstacle, you build all this muscle memory and sensation for one obstacle or these specific obstacles, and all of a sudden that sensation is off. That's exactly what happened to me. And next thing I knew it, I was in the water. And so that was something I took on into my third season was, you know what, I'm going to not train nearly as much this year. And when I do, I'm going to not take it as seriously. I'm not going to let it consume me. Because that was another big thing. When you train that much and you spend that much time, that much of your life and dedication, and all of a sudden in a split second, it's all your dreams are over and you're wet and it's done for and you have to wait a whole nother year. It's kind of heartbreaking. It's very, very difficult to deal with. And it kind of throws you into kind of a, you know, many ninjas go into deep depression for a couple months afterwards, you know, just like, oh man, like, what happened? And that was something I was like, I don't want to do that again. It's so horrible.
Yep.
And so I really tried not to take it too seriously. I didn't train as much. I was working full time, busing tables. And I just try to focus on other things to kind of take me away from Ninja Warrior. And going into it this year, obviously all my training from the years past was still with me. So I wasn't like physically less strong. But mostly I feel like it really, really strengthened my mental capacity to be able to perform under such extreme conditions, because that's what's really hard to train for is, you know, you're competing in the middle of the night. Like when I climbed the stage four rope, it was almost 5 a.m. and it was 110 degrees outside and you're just physically exhausted and sleep deprived. And so there's all these different things that at the end of the day, it really came down to my mental strength and if I could keep it all together and stay focused mentally. And so that was the progression right there. And every year I learned and every year I adapted. And, you know, that's what being a ninja is all about, is being able to adapt to your surroundings. And that's what I did.
Absolutely. That was really well put, actually. And I mean, I think that's why the show is so riveting, right? I mean, there's clearly this obvious kind of dynamism and athleticism on display in ways that, you know, we're just not used to seeing if you're kind of used to, you know, watching traditional football, basketball. We get those patterns. And this is something where, you know, you're seeing all these weird obstacles and having to deal with that. And I think it's really interesting to hear you talk about. I mean, I think there's no question. It's just kind of inherently obvious that the training is, this is going to suck you in and make people obsessive in terms of the training. I think somehow the show just, that seems obvious that's going to be the pattern. So to hear you talk about to not assume from all the reps in the backyard that you've got a given obstacle completely down by memory, if there's a slight tweak, that's going to throw you off, right? So the necessary training, the not overtraining, the ability to adapt, and the ability to do this stuff at 5 a.m. It is a really remarkable, the mental and physical preparation and flexibility and adaptability really is a remarkable thing, right?
Absolutely, man. And a lot of the times, I mean, we don't know what obstacles are going to be given to us, so we can only train so much on a double salmon ladder or this or that, you know, up until we're there in Vegas and we have 2 or 3 days to compete. We have no clue what obstacles we're going to have to compete on. So it's all last minute and you don't get to rehearse them. You're there and it's time and it's like, all right, here you go. Like, let's see you be a ninja now.
Yeah. As people are listening to this, and some of them are, you know the show and are maybe aspiring competitors themselves. Do you have, and then a related question. One, what sort of advice might you have for that person who's thinking, maybe I'd like to give this a try? And then secondly, what I'm kind of getting a better sense of climbers in particular being drawn to this competition. What other athletes of what other backgrounds do you think are particularly well poised for success in a competition like American Ninja Warrior?
I mean, absolutely. The obstacles are, as of the past and the history in Japan, all the Ninja Warrior obstacles, as you get further and further into the competition, the more difficult obstacles become more grip and upper body strength oriented. So that right there being said, it's like, climbers are known out of any other discipline in the world for having the strongest grip strength and upper body. So if you are a climber, sure, you're going to have a huge advantage if you can get to those obstacles. Yep. And that's something all of us climbers have been struggling with for so long. And so, you know, you have to combine that with, you know, the kind of, I guess, parkourish type gymnastic lower body jumping routines. And for me personally, actually, I didn't do a lot of like a parkour type training, and but I have so many years of other lower body type sports that I feel like some of those things help contribute to like my lower body coordination from skateboarding and dirt biking and motorcycling and slacklining and even just hiking to the crag, man. Like I like hiking up crazy talus and running down as fast as I can, like bouncing off rocks and jumping, and I feel like that's enough. Obviously it was enough, but we'll see in the future if they kind of step it up a notch and kind of flip things around and make the upper body stuff more easy and the lower body stuff more difficult. So it's kind of hard to say in the future what disciplines are going to do better. It just takes, like, you know, I don't want to say I'm like this great, amazing all around athlete, but I feel like that's in the end what it takes to be the first American Ninja Warrior and hopefully for the next American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah. And so with your own training, I mean, we've talked about you're expecting things to be different for this coming season. What are you doing in terms of your own approach for this upcoming season? I mean, I guess one train of thought might be like,
my approach this year is going to kind of be the same kind of approach I went to last year, you know, not take it too seriously, but, you know, keep things in check. And I'm going to do a lot of my kind of underground secret training I did last year. And we'll see if it pans out and if it pays off. Obviously I want to work more on some of my lower body, strength, you know, agility and trampoline jumping. And cause that's always a given, you know, they're always going to throw some kind of weird trampoline bouncy kind of obstacle that's like really hard to train for, and you just got to be able to read it just right and hit it just right and run through smoothly. So
yeah,
that's something I gotta, like, you know, once again, you just have to be ready for anything.
Yeah. Just go train to be ready for anything. I don't quite know. I don't quite know what that means or how you do that, but
who knows? We could. One of the obstacles could be like, all right, you got to solve this Rubik's cube, and then get blindfolded and walk backwards up this. And after running 10 minutes on a treadmill, who knows what they're gonna.
Yeah,
they could really throw in some total random abstract obstacle that no one was prepared for and totally take people by surprise. And so you really just have to be, I mean, I doubt something like that would happen, but you never know.
Yeah. Or you have to, you know, for this next season, the last obstacle will be like, you have to beat, I don't know, Bobby Fischer at a game of chess or something. Like, who knows? They'll, or like a sword fight or something. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you should be working on your chess game. You know, just to really, really make sure.
Yeah, chess and thumb wrestling.
Right. I want to double back for a second on, talking about grip strength, especially in the final stages of the competition. How strong, say, I mean, putting this in bouldering terms or bouldering grades, what would you compare this to when we're getting into the really demanding grip stuff? I mean, do you think this requires like V10 or V11 finger strength, or do you think that the right athlete could actually make it through and be very successful even if they were, say, a V4 or V5 boulder?
So yeah, I mean, we've seen what a lot of the other competitors are kind of at that skill level. They're not the best climbers, you know, but they do have a base level of climbing. You know, they're about a V4, V5 climber, which at the end of the day is, as far as individual obstacles, that's plenty strong to do those individual obstacles that we've had in the past, because all these other ninjas are doing all the obstacles that we have in the competition. But it's all about being, you know, being able to do like multiple of these obstacles all in a row with the lights, camera, action, the pressure, the sleep deprivation, and just, all in a row, and to not mess up. And so to be able to combine all that together, I personally feel like the stronger you are, the easier it'll be for you. So, you know, if you're doing V5 obstacles and you're a V5 climber, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you to do all those in a row versus if you are a V10 or a V15 climber, it's just going to be that much more attainable to accomplish. So, you know, I would definitely recommend for everybody, like whatever level you're at, get as strong as possible. And, you know, obviously the stronger you can climb, the easier those obstacles will be. But at the end of the day, it's like you could trip walking on the curb, you know, and that's how Ninja Warrior is sometimes. You can literally fall and slip on the most simple thing, but there's no recovery, you know, like with rock climbing, you know, we slip and fall or like mess up all the time on like a V4, right? But you can recover and hold on and pull right back on and continue on. But with this, it's one shot, one kill. A lot of the obstacles are, you know, if you make a bad miscalculation, you're done. You can't recover. And so that's kind of what's made it so impossible, so to speak.
It really is an amazing, I mean, it's an amazing competition, and again, I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment for that reason. So the competition again this year, this will begin sometime in June.
So the Vegas finals are usually scheduled every year for about June, and all the qualifying, the city qualifiers are yet to be announced. But as of the last couple of years, they usually take place anywhere from like beginning of March to end of May is usually when they set apart the times for the different city qualifiers.
Okay.
So here fairly soon though, you know, like I said, the deadlines for submissions are in a couple weeks.
Yep.
And from that point on, they'll start making the phone call that every single person and every existing ninja and every future ninja is dying to hear from. And that's the casting company calling you saying, hey, you've been accepted on American Ninja Warrior. Like, congratulations. Like, every year I'm still nervous about it. Obviously this year I feel a little bit less nervous, but every year it's like been this huge stress, like in my head, I'm like, are they going to want me back? Do I get to try again? Like, oh my, like, cause they could just easily be like, we don't want that guy anymore.
So you literally, I mean, I wondered about that too. I mean, you're not getting some, you know, buy rounds or something. You're going to come in.
No.
Yep.
No, no special treatment, man.
No special treatment. Wow. Yeah, you got your work cut out for you all over again.
Yeah, it'll be a new season, new obstacles, new challenge, and that's kind of the cool thing about the sport is it's going to continue to evolve along with all the ninjas themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly we're still seeing a strong, you know, uptick on this, right? And frankly, I mean, I think that is really amazing. I mean, I think, like, you know, growing up, the stuff that you would see most on, you know, the big TV networks was kind of the same sporting events, you know, all the time, except for every couple, you know, every 4 years or whatever, when you get the Olympics and see some of this different stuff. But I think that's another reason why this is so cool, that people who maybe never did care about team sports or didn't feel like, you know, didn't feel like throwing a baseball or a football, it's just such a compelling thing. And I think it's great to just to have this whole new outlet for incredible athletes, you know, to showcase what they can do. I think that's just good on a lot of different levels. And I mean, not to overstate this or anything, but even just in terms of, like, I don't know, the health of the country or and around the world, right? You'd like to think that you'd see younger people seeing the show and thinking, who knows, whether they see the show and then just start getting into climbing or slacklining or gymnastics or whatever, or parkour. That just seems positive on a lot of fronts, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the overall message and point that's being put out there by everyone and the show itself and the competition, and it's directly reaching out to the youth. I mean, yeah. Everyone is excited, but specifically the youth. I mean, there's millions of kids across the country who want to be ninjas and are jumping around and they want to be like a ninja and do whatever it takes to be a ninja. And that to me is awesome. And that's amazing. And it's just speaking in terms, you know, you have to eat healthy and take care of your body. You know, it's like, if you want to perform like a Ferrari, you got to like treat your body like a Ferrari. You know, you're not going to put regular unleaded fuel in your sports car. You know, you got to take care of yourself. And, you know, that message alone to like the youth is amazing. You know, it's in it and it could help with a lot of, you know, the obesity issues we have around the entire world and health overall. And I think it will continue to put forth that amazing message to everyone. So
you know, you won a nice little prize at the end of this show. And it's got to be a little weird coming from what sounds like a fully true, tried and true, you know, dirtbag climber existence. Life's got to be a little bit different now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in ways it is different, and in other ways it's not, because, you know, I've always, you know, me and Laura have always considered ourselves to be rich and have everything we want and everything we want to do based off of the way we've designed our lifestyles and our simple, frugal lifestyle. And so this is just icing on the cake. You know, we're not doing anything extraordinary that we weren't able to do before. We're just going to be a little bit more cozy being able to do that. And yeah, I mean, that's at the end of the day, we just want to go rock climbing and have fun and enjoy our lives. And that's what we were doing prior to all this. So a lot hasn't really changed that much as far as our mentality and what we're doing. And obviously new doors are going to open up for us and we're really excited to have this cool tool to do amazing fun things with it and to make a lot of good come from it. So,
yeah, pretty good. So like a lot of championships, there was just a little bit of controversy at the end of this one. Right. And, an interesting situation. Jeff Britton completes this course. You know, great performance. You come along and remarkably manage to do things a bit quicker. And the rules, as I understand, are completely black and white about this. And you know, there's no question. I mean, you're the champion of the season. But it was an interesting. It led to, you know, some interesting sort of buzz and controversy about that. I'm just curious to know if, you know, how you've been thinking about that in terms of, you know, would you like to see, personally, would you like to see kind of the rules stay as they were for last season? Do you think that it would be interesting or useful to sort of put any tweaks on those rules? do you care? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, from the very beginning, and that's something that is intriguing me to want to be the first American Ninja Warrior and to accomplish this, was it was kind of known from the very beginning was this is an all or nothing kind of ordeal, you know, like you either get it all or you get nothing. Like, and there's, it is very black and white. There's no like, oh, well he basically did it. And, or he was only, you know what I mean? It's like, no, that's, I didn't write the rules. That's just how they are. But that's something to me is kind of driven me to want to accomplish this. It's like only one person can have this title. Mm-hmm. And by getting this title, you are winning the competition. And so during that night, I totally was shocked and caught off guard when he went before me. And it's funny because they say it was by my choice, but it was actually, you know, if you know the rules of the competition and you watch the rest of the show, based off of your time on the previous stage is how it determines the order for the next stage. And that's how all the entire competition runs that way. So mm-hmm. I had a faster time on stage 3. Mm-hmm. So I went last on stage 4. And so, you know, he had his attempt at the competition, and you know, we went into stage 4 knowing, you know, they announced loud and clear, they're like, you know, in the event that more than one person reaches stage 4, it's no longer about completing the course. You know, that's kind of irrelevant at this point. It's now comes down to who, you know, for the first time in the entire competition, and it's been, we've all of us ninjas, the producers, everyone's been talking about it for the years, is like,
yep,
there's going to be a race at the rope for the title. Like, there's going to be a race at the rope. It's a fact. One of these days it's going to happen. And sure enough, it happened. And I was a part of it alongside of, you know, Jeff Britton, who is an amazing, talented athlete. And, you know, right when he finished and started calling himself the first American Ninja Warrior, me amongst millions of other people were like, hey, easy there, tough guy. Wait a second. The competition's not over yet. There's still another person gets his chance. You know, like, it doesn't really make sense to me and a lot of people that just because he physically got to go for, like, you know, imagine if there was 5 people, like, and he got to go first, was that really fair? Like, only he gets the chance having the title, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's like, and as far as I've ever known, the title goes to the person who wins the competition. And in my mind, I was like, well, he didn't win yet.
Yeah.
So he basically had the title. He had his hand on the trophy of being the first American Ninja Warrior and the $1 million prize. He had his hand on it. He was touching it for about 5 minutes until my turn, and then that's when the decision was made. And unfortunately, you know, like I said, it's a cutthroat sport.
Yep.
And competition, and winner takes all, and that's just how it was for me at the end of the day. And you know, people either see it or they don't. And yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with the next season if they decide to change those rules around and make it more of like, oh well, the second place will get this. And I mean, I'm sure they'll kind of restructure some kind of things. I don't know if this controversy has got them thinking in different ways, but I mean, I would assume that they stick to their historical rules as far as, like I mentioned, you know, it's an all or nothing competition. So.
Yep. Yep. I mean, speaking of the, you know, you were talking about the mental toughness that goes into all of this, like, that's just a whole nother level, right? Like, in addition to everything else you're probably trying to focus in on and think about that evening, you've got to deal with that too. Like, that just seems remarkable again. And I think it's yet another kind of, you know, feather in your cap. It's like, yet another thing to kind of zone in or, you know, not focus on and just go about the task at hand. That was impressive.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, I really kind of made it a point in that moment to just stay hyper focused and super in tune with what my surroundings and my breathing, especially, and my body, and just listening to it and just, you know, taking my time and at the same time having fun with it. You know, you can kind of see throughout different times of my competition, I kind of know when to have fun and to celebrate. And then I know when it's time to, like, all right, it's game time. Like, there's no messing around. Like, I don't hear anyone around me. I literally was on another planet. Like, there was no water below me. It's just me and these obstacles. I'm one with the obstacles, as cheesy as that sounds. And literally, I didn't hear the crowd. I didn't hear anyone around me. No, nothing existed except for me and these obstacles. And then I got to these safe zones. where I could kind of take a breath from that because it was really exhausting. And then that's where I would have fun and kind of smile. And I do that throughout the entire competition. I get into these moments where I'm like, all right, I got this. Like, I can enjoy this for a minute, you know, and kind of have some clarity. And then I go right back into that zone where, you know, I'm on another planet.
It's pretty remarkable. You know, I don't want to keep you. I appreciate the conversation, Isaac. And, going to be watching intently, you know, this coming season and wish you and Laura much success. But it's been great talking today. And I'd love to talk sometime down the road, hopefully, once you successfully defend your title.
Cool, man. That sounds great. It was a pleasure speaking to you, Jonathan, and thanks for having me.
That's it for this edition of the Blister Podcast. Thanks to Isaac Caldeiro for the conversation, and you can follow Isaac and his girlfriend and fellow ninja, Laura Cassana, on Instagram as they get ready for another season of American Ninja Warrior. Just look up Isaac Caldeiro, one word, and Laura Cassana, one word. Thanks also to our amazing audio engineer, Justin Bob, and to Alaska Airlines for sponsoring this episode. Be sure to go to alaskaair.com/ski to check out all their current deals. Until next time, head over to blisterreview.com to see what we're up to there, subscribe to the Blister Podcast on iTunes, and we'll catch you next Thursday on the Blister Podcast.